Welcome to the Insane Asylum.
Welcome back to the Insane Asylum. Night Living Dreads podcast. Podcast covers all and anything horror. I'm Otis B. Dreads. As always, I have Mrs. Dreads here. How are you, Mrs. Dreads?
I am good.
Awesome. We got a really cool show. They're not going to hear a whole lot of us. And I noticed the white coats were eyeing you up. Did you get an infraction here in the Insane Asylum?
I may be taken away.
You may. I don't know what has happened. I don't know what you have done to piss them off. But
they've been out for me for a long time.
They've got it in for you, man. All right. Well, yeah, we have a really cool show tonight. Interviewing a Mr. Mike Schiff, producer, director. He does the editing, photography. You'll hear all that. Of a new documentary coming out called The History of Metal and Horror. Yeah. And I really didn't anticipate that this would even happen. Honestly. I mean, he's, you know, he's a busy guy. I didn't know if he would have time. I think they're doing some post-production, but before we get into all that, because we're not going to be talking long.
Right.
I'm going to get right into this interview. We have to give out some horror love. That's right. Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Closed, open group. Check them out. Best damn horror group on Facebook. Second best, in my opinion. Misfit Horror Fiend Club. That's right. Check them out as well. After Dark, your home for horror movie watch parties.
Yep.
I couldn't think of the word there for a second. Horror movie watch parties there at After Dark. Check them out. And of course, the Slaughterhouse. Slaughter on, Wayne.
Slaughter on, Garth.
Oh, you laugh. I know you laugh every week, and you just shake your head in utter disbelief that I'm actually saying that.
Yep.
I mean, it came off the top of my head, and I thought it was clever.
Very clever.
Yeah. I don't believe you. All right. And, of course, the non-horror. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, Zombie Boob.
Yeah.
Zombie Boob is another one. You get a lot of funny stuff over there, some horror stuff as well. How could you not have some horror stuff with a name like Zombie Boob?
Right.
Plus, you know, it's really catchy name. And then our non-horror love obviously goes to Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis spelled with a K. So check them out to satisfy your dark humor needs and your need to see things about Mary Jane. So yeah, that there we go. Horror love wrap up. We're gonna have a little discussion. I hope that your infraction wasn't so bad that you missed the. I hear him pacing back and forth outside the door. So I hope that it wasn't too bad. But I guess we'll find out. But real quick, I mean, because we're going to take a short little, I have an appropriate song, I think, that I'm going to play while we get Mr. Schiff on the phone. And that would be Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare. It happens to be one of the interviews that he conducted.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be appropriate. I've been listening to Welcome to My Nightmare a lot, that album.
It's a good album.
Yeah, it is a very good album. So, but what I mean, we go to a lot of, you know, metal concerts, music festivals, and whatnot. We see a lot of like horror T-shirts. You talk to anybody at a lot of these concerts, and a lot of them like horror. It seems like a lot of people that are into horror are also into metal music, and a lot of people that are into metal music also seem to be into horror.
Right.
It's like a marriage made in heaven. So that's, you know, and I'm a huge documentary filmmaker.
Good. You wish.
I wish, yeah. But a documentary film watcher.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these two, I've watched, you know, documentaries on metal, the history of metal, the history of horror. And now we have somebody who has come up with the most awesome idea to combine the two and dive into the question of why is it that metal and horror are so intermingled? Why do you think they are?
I don't know.
It's strange. It's like the unspoken, you know, kind of.
I think it's horror's dark and metal's dark.
Yeah, yeah. If you watch some of the trailers over there at metalhorror.com, which is Mike's website for the documentary, got a few, you know, promos and trailers over there. They actually have Sarah Karloff, which is Boris Karloff, of course, is Frankenstein,
mm-hmm.
his daughter.
Right.
And she mentioned something very similar to that in one of the promos that, you know, there's a dark side to metal. There's a obvious dark side to horror. And so maybe it's that dark side part of it that combines the two. But who are we to, you know, discuss that? We have somebody who has dove into it and talked to, you know, people on both sides in both of these genres, from the metal side, from the horror side. It's going to be a really, really fun talk. And again, I hope your infraction wasn't so bad that you can at least be here. But if not, maybe they'll let you listen to it in your padded cell.
I'll hear it from the other side.
All right. So let's dive right into this. We're going to take a short break. Little Alice Cooper for your ear hole. Welcome to my nightmare. And when we come back, we're going to have Mike Schiff, again, director, producer, the history of metal and horror. Hopefully Mrs. Dreads will be here with us. So stay tuned. You know where we're going.
Welcome to my nightmare, yeah.
Back to the Night of the Living Dreads, back here in the Insane Asylum. Took Mrs. Dreads away. The White Coats came and got her. She will not be here this second half, but that's okay. Because I know a lot of you listeners are fans of metal. And of course, fans of horror, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. So this is the perfect ending to this show. Director, producer, among other things, which we'll get into, of a documentary coming out hopefully soon, The History of Metal and Horror. Mr. Mike Shift, how are you? Or Schiff, I said
I'm good,
Shift.
Yeah, how are you, man? How's it going?
Good, man. It's a recording on a Friday night. It's a good night to talk about some metal and horror. So let's dive right into it. The History of Metal and Horror. It's almost like we all knew that there was a connection there. You see the shirts at the conventions, the metal shirts at horror conventions, horror shirts at metal concerts. I mean, so is that kind of what got it started? You kind of start seeing that happening and wondering, hey, what is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a fan of both genres for a long time, and basically how the documentary came about was I've been friends with Rob Lucas, who's also a producer on the documentary, and he's pretty good friends with Kirk Hammett, and Kirk was doing his Fear Fest Evil convention a couple of years back, and Rob needed an extra hand doing some videotaping, photography, things like that, extra hand on deck because he was helping out. So I flew out there and attended the show, did some work. And after I'm talking to Rob after the fact, I'm like, this whole convention is really just about metal and horror all coming together. Kirk had a bunch of his metal friends there and they were performing, and the whole is horror, people that he's been a fan of for years were in attendance, and the whole convention is really just about metal and horror. So I asked Rob, has there ever been a documentary done on the history of metal and horror? Like anything kind of that explains this connection? And he's like, no. I was like, well, why don't we do something? He's like, all right, cool. So started putting together some ideas of how we wanted to go about this, and so he's started reaching out to some of his people. He's pretty well connected in the horror business, and but the first interview we did was actually with Chris Jericho, and I knew Chris from some years back because I filmed and edited one of the Fozzy music videos for Sandpaper. So I had a contact. I reached out and I said, hey, Chris, and I'm doing this doc, and I just wonder if you'd want to do an interview. He's like, yeah, absolutely. So Fozzy was in town and we went over and shot the interview. And from there, it's just been kind of working through my contacts, with Jose Mangan at the Sirius XM. He put me in touch with a bunch of guys, like Dave Mustaine. He hooked me up with him, and we ended up flying over to Dave's house and filmed the interview there and everything. So a lot of it's been just getting interviews through people who know them or know their management. And sometimes it's just me reaching out to management directly and getting things worked out from there. So that's pretty much how it all came about. It's just, it's sort of like an obvious thing. We all know that there's this connection, but there's never been a piece that kind of explored, you know, why this happened and stuff. So, you know,
yeah,
I wanted to
and you know, that's the thing, because I've always been a huge fan of metal, going back to the, you know, the 80s and whatnot. Always been a fan of horror, and I love documentaries. So what you're doing, sir, is right up my alley, because, you know, I've watched, you know, documentaries on the history of metal, documentaries on the, you know, history of horror, and you know, going back to the 20s and Nosferatu and this and that, and but there's never been one, even though most horror fans, I see a lot of horror fans that absolutely love metal, a lot of metal fans that absolutely love horror. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, this is really awesome, which brings me to my next question. What do you, Mike Schiff, think is the reason that metal and horror, and I know you guys have done, you know, a lot of interviews. I've been down the list. I've been over there at metalhorror.com, which is where everyone needs to go if you want to keep an eye out for this documentary, get all the latest on it. You have a rundown of some artists and things there. You know, why is it, what do you think is the reason that these two genres seem to go hand in hand?
I mean, a lot of it is just, it's sort of each genre is pretty aggressive in their own kind of way. You know, metal music is aggressive. Horror is aggressive. It's, you know, it gets your, you know, your body just worked up, your mind worked up, you know, when you're watching and listening to these things. So it kind of works. It kind of works the same way. I think it just, it, you know, gets to the brain in the same type of way. So it's sort of, if you have an appreciation for one, more likely than not, you have an appreciation for the other one. So I think it's, you know, just sort of like, you know, if you have an interest in the things that are aggressive and dark, then you tend to gravitate towards these types of art forms, I think.
No, you said you've been a horror fan for, and I think I heard in one of your other interviews, you've been a horror fan longer than you've been a metal fan. If I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. you didn't get into, like, really metal until, I think you said, like, the 90s or something. Is that it?
Yeah, it's a funny kind of thing, because horror I got into really, really, really early. He was a big horror fan. He was a fan of the Universal Monsters. He loved Hammer House of Horror films, and so I got exposed to that stuff really early on, and I became, in the mid-80s, I became a huge Elm Street fan. Like, that was my thing. I was drawing Freddy Krueger gloves all over my notebooks in school and making my own. And originally I wanted to be a special effects artist. That was my original career goal. So I do a lot of, like, Freddy makeups and things like that. And, you know, I had a cousin who did shop work, so he made me a Freddy glove out of real metal and stuff. So but yeah, I was like a huge horror fan. You know, Sundays were dollar day at the video store, so I'd rent 5 horror movies every week and just binge on those things constantly. So that was my thing, and that's always what I wanted to be involved with in my future. And then but I wasn't a huge music fan in the 80s so much. And I do remember the Lost Boys soundtrack being one of the first records that I bought, just because I love the movie so much. And I just started buying horror film soundtracks, you know, even just like instrumental stuff, a lot of Elm Street soundtracks. So I kind of got exposed to some music there. And of course, you know, a lot of the Elm Street soundtracks had metal music on it. So I kind of got exposed to metal in that sense, but I wasn't like really like a metal guy. And, you know, I was like a big Prince fan.
I like Prince too, brother. There's no shame in that game.
Man. No, Prince. I mean, Prince was a genius, man. We lost a great talent there. So, and he's had some heavy stuff in his catalog too. So, you know, can't front on that. But yeah. So I was into that, like, that kind of stuff. And then in the '90s, early '90s, I got exposed to more grunge. I was really into grunge at that time. And then from grunge, I kind of bridged over into metal, and I think that's kind of how it started happening in the mid to late 90s. So, you know, I kind of got exposed to more metal and had more interest in metal, and then it kind of just continued on from there, and that eventually became my favorite genre of music. So
day, you know, that's your favorite genre of music, heavy metal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm still a big Prince fan, but as far as the genre goes, you know, you know, I have appreciation for all different types of music for the most part, but As far as like a genre that I really stick to, yeah, it's definitely metal.
So you mentioned that, you know, special effects, you know, makeup and things like that was, you know, really what you really wanted to do. So I'm assuming you were a big Tom Savini fan.
Yeah. It's a funny kind of thing because when I was a kid, I'd go to like the Fangoria conventions when they were in town and stuff. And yeah, Tom was like the guy that I looked up to out of all the makeup artists. I mean, I love Dick Smith, I love Rick Baker and all those guys, but yeah, Tom was just, you know, the guy I kind of gravitated towards. And I remember waiting in long lines to go up and get his autograph and stuff. And you know, it was just like, oh my god, you know, Tom Savini got his autograph. And I remember I asked him a question, you know, at one of the panels when I was a kid, and all that stuff. And then, you know, through the years, and also, you know, through my friend Rob, who's really good friends with Tom, like Tom became a friend. So like now Tom Savini and I are going out to get sandwiches and stuff. And, you know, and I told him, I was like, you know, I used to wait in line to get your autograph. Now we're waiting in line together to get a sandwich.
That is absolutely awesome, brother.
Yeah. I took him to Katz's Deli in Manhattan last time he was out here. So, we had a good time, but, yeah, so it's kind of weird how things work out that way, you know? And, so yeah, Tom and I, like, we've been friends for a couple of years now, and also kind of to bridge horror and metal again. You know, I've known Corey King for a bunch of years as well, so you know, I knew that Slipknot was coming out with their new record and everything, and I'm like, I wonder who Corey has in mind to do his next mask and stuff. So right. I kind of reached out to Tom. I was like, hey Tom, you know, would you consider doing Corey's next mask for the Slipknot? To the next round of Slipknot, and he's like, "Yeah, of course." You know, so then I reached out to Corey's management, and you know, and things kind of just moved on from there. And the next thing you know, and you know, I'm friends with Jason Baker, who was also Tom Savini's assistant, and Jason had known Corey for a little bit as well. So we all kind of talked, and next thing you know, we're just getting Corey's face molded for the next mask, and that's how that all came about.
Wow, so you were kind of the bridge almost between Savini and Corey Taylor as far as the new mask. Is that what I'm getting here?
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's safe to tell that.
Well, you were a big part, if not the, you know, sole bridge.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's kind of it was like my idea, and then those guys got together and worked it out from there.
Awesome.
So. Yeah. So I had a hand in it. I mean, it's, you know, I know that there's a lot of criticism about the mask and stuff like that. So I'm like, well, do I want to take credit for this or not? But
I have seen the criticism. When I first got I came across an article, I think it was from dreadcentral.com. They put out that Savini had taken and, you know, worked on the mask for the, you know, new core. And a lot of people were, yes, really ragging on it. They're like, come on, Savini, you know, the king of gore and special effects, and this is all he can come up with. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe that's all Corey wanted.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's because, you know, a lot of people, they just don't really know. You know, they just think that Corey reached out to Tom and said, hey, you know, can you one of your creations, you know? And of course, you know, if he had just left it like that, Tom would have just put together, you know, what he thought would have been appropriate. But yeah, I mean, Corey had a specific idea in mind, and he asked Tom to, you know, Tom and the team to kind of put that vision together, and that's what they delivered. So it's not, so yeah, I definitely don't think it's fair to criticize Tom for it, because Tom was really just giving Corey what Corey wanted, you know, and
yeah,
Corey wanted
exactly.
Something that he could also change throughout the tour. You know, it's kind of a clear material, so he's able to paint his face underneath, and it's, so it's constantly changing in that sense. You know, he's always changing the look with the mask. So, but yeah, I mean, I understand the criticism, but, you know, a lot of people just don't kind of really know the how it all came about.
How it all, right, exactly. Speaking of Corey Taylor and Tom Savini, those two I've seen in some of the trailers, the promos, which everyone can, again, catch at metalhorror.com. They were involved. What are some other artists and actors from both genres that people can look forward to, you know, in this documentary?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the biggest names on the horror side, of course, like Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie, Dave Mustaine, Kirk Hammett, Corey Taylor, Jonathan Davis, Marky Ramone, Doyle, Phil Anselmo, Scott Ian, Charlie Benante, John Five, Guar, George Cannibal Corpse Fisher and Corpse Grinder and Wednesday 13, Chris Jericho, a whole bunch of guys on that side. And then of course the horror guys, we got John Carpenter, Tom Savini, Kane Hodder, Doug Bradley, Bill Moseley, Gunnar Hansen, rest in peace, John Russo, Linnea Quigley, Nick Castle, Sid Haig, just tons and tons of people on both sides.
That's an absolutely, amazing, interview lineup that you have going on there. Which one was, your favorite interview? Now, I think I did hear in the interview that what was it, your wife who would do a lot of the questions or camera work, or and you were working in the background with lighting. What was the favorite interview? Whether funny, whether just interesting, I mean, what was the favorite interview so far?
Man, it's like I get that question asked a lot, and it's always kind of hard to tell. My wife definitely helped me on a lot of shoots. Basically, my production has always been sort of like a two person deal. I have one person because I run both cameras, I set up the lights, run the audio, do all that kind of stuff. So I'm just making sure technically everything is functioning throughout the interview, and then I need one other person to actually just sit in the interview chair, or interviewer chair. To ask the questions and stuff like that. That way I can manage all the other stuff,
Sure.
then I can interject every now and then and say, oh, yeah, let's add to that a little bit. And so I'll be directing along the way. But and as far as like a favorite goes, it's really, really hard because I mean, there are some that I've been a fan of for years. And so there's kind of like, kind of fun in that sense, like, oh my God, I'm here with so and so who I've been a fan of like for so many years, it's so cool. And then there are other artists who maybe I haven't been as big of a fan of, but they were so cool anyway to talk to and learn more about them and stuff. So it's all been different types of experiences. But I mean, some of the biggest names, like Alice Cooper, was just the nicest guy, and he was so generous with his time and everything. He was so relaxed, there's no rush, or anything. We're just hanging out, having a conversation. He was just the nicest guy, like so friendly and pleasant. My
Been
wife and I had such a good
listening
time.
to Welcome to My Nightmare, actually getting ready
Oh yeah.
for this podcast. That's one of my go-tos. I mean, Welcome to My
Yeah.
Nightmare, I mean, it's just an absent that and Killers, two of my favorites. But okay, as far as the interviews, now you said you weren't into metal until later on. Did you learn anything that maybe you didn't know from one of the metal, that genre side of the documentary? Did you learn some from anything from that you didn't know, that you were like, oh, holy shit, I didn't realize that?
I mean, no major things like that. I mean, I just got a little bit more insight into certain things, like when Dave Mustaine was talking about Vic Rattlehead, and stuff like that.
Yes.
I didn't really know the whole backstory of how that character kind of came about, and he was able to explain that in great detail. So yeah, I mean, I definitely learned a little bit more about the little things like that along the way. But yeah, I mean, nothing really like, cause nothing major, that was like mind blowing. But yeah, just like stuff like that, like just hearing their stories and how certain things came about, how they incorporated horror, into their music and stuff. How they got introduced to things when they were kids. What kind of books were they reading? Did they have subscriptions? Were they watching, like chiller theater and all this stuff when they were kids? And so those are all kind of things that I learned about them. And what influenced them, and then how they were such huge fans of these genres, and how they kept bringing that stuff along throughout their career.
Now, are you still doing interviews? Is the interview process over? Are you still, searching out other artists, from either genre, or is that done? Are we in post-production at this point, or are we still looking at interviews?
Yeah, I mean, it's been in post-production for a while, but I've always left it open in case anyone became available. I mean, I already had a rough cut done, and then, you know, finally I got, like, the Rob Zombie interview, and then I got the Marky Ramone interview. So, you know, until it's actually, like, in the can, I mean, I'm still open to getting more interviews along the way if I feel that they're really a name that, you know, that's important. And, you know, there's certainly a few, you know, one thing, sometimes I'll get like criticism from fans is, oh, how come you don't have so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so in the documentary? And basically, you know, without naming names necessarily, it's like, well, you know, if you don't see someone there that you think really should be there, chances are I tried getting them and I just couldn't. Right. But
I'm sure that's a lot of red tape, ain't it? I mean, you got to go through their management and this and that.
Yeah.
And excuse me, if it's a musician, you know, you got to look at, you know, are they on tour? Are they doing something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Rob Zombie, I'm a huge fan. He music, movies, and this and that. So, I mean, that there's got to be, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, maybe conflict of, you know, the you know, scheduling.
Sure. I mean, I was in touch with Rob's management a couple of years ago, actually, and it probably took about a year and a half to actually get the interview with him because he's such a busy guy. You know, like I'd reach out at one point and they'd say, well, Rob's busy right now working on the new album. No, Rob's busy on the new tour. Rob's busy on the new movie, you know, and all this kind of stuff, which is great. I mean, I think that's awesome that he's so busy. Right. But yeah, it's hard to lock a guy like that down for an interview when, you know, when he's got so much stuff going on. But finally, when he was coming to New York, it just happened to work out, you know, and so they were able to schedule the interview, and it was great. And the first thing Rob says was, "Okay, man, I'm so sorry it took this long for this to happen."
He seems like such a nice guy, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he definitely was. He was totally cool, and he's like, "Yeah, man, you know, if there's anything else you need for this, just let us know." And yeah, he was a super super cool guy. So he was a great guy to have, and it was definitely worth the wait. But yeah, I mean, things are really wrapping up. It's the rough cut is basically done. I'm putting together a short 10-minute wraparound film, which is gonna, each segment of the film is gonna help set up the segments of the documentary. So it's not just a straight talking head documentary with a bunch of footage and stuff. There's actually gonna be another story happening around it that's gonna bring everything together. So I've been piecing all that stuff together, and of course we were able to get Michael Berryman to host, and we were able to film his footage. We filmed his footage just over a month ago, and so I'm putting all his stuff into the short film portion of it. So that was a great addition. And yeah, I mean, until everything is 100% in the can, if I'm still able to score an interview with someone that I've been trying to get for a while, then I'll still shoot that and put it in there. But it's getting pretty tight as it is. Like I'm trying not to get the running time too long, because even though the stuff is fun to watch and I think the fans will dig it, you know, I don't want them getting sore sitting in the seat either, you know, at the premieres.
Exactly.
And stuff. So
I'm trying to
keep it at a reasonable length. And then if there's going to be tons of extended interviews, then that's all stuff that I could probably put on a Blu-ray or something like that anyways.
Sure. Extras and things of that nature. So do you have a possible projected release date, maybe within a few months? Or, I mean, has that been talked about? I mean, as you're in post-production?
Yeah, I'm really trying to get this thing cranked out sooner than later, because there are a bunch of film festivals coming up, and I want to run the festival circuit for a bit. So I'm really trying to get this thing rushed through, not in a, you know, haphazard kind of way, but I'm trying to get it done sooner than later so I can hopefully make some of these bigger festivals and get it out there. But there'll be premieres. There'll be a premiere in New York and L.A. most likely. So we'll definitely be announcing those once everything's ready to go. But
I'm sure all that information. Sorry to cut you off, my friend, but I'm sure that information will be on metalhorror.com when that becomes available.
It'll be on metalhorror.com. Also, people can follow us on social media. on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and that's at The Metal Horror.
Awesome. Awesome.
And that's, yeah, that's basically where we'll do more immediate news releases and things.
Through the social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, watching through, because you have three promos over there at metalhorror.com, and I seen one that made me, okay, LOL out loud. Really, I literally laughed out loud when I saw it, and that was you talking about getting bagpipe lessons from Jonathan Davis. Can you speak on that at all? Because it looked like Jonathan was like, oh, man, you got a lot of fucking work to do there, brother.
I've never played the bagpipes in my life, but
I didn't think you did that bad. But I think bagpipes always kind of sound that way. I don't know. I'm not a bagpipe player.
I made some noise with it, but the bagpipes were actually malfunctioning because there was a leak in the bag, so I couldn't get it to work properly to begin with. So I got just enough air in there to just belt out one note or something like that. But yeah, I mean, basically. People can check it out online. It was just it was another promo. I was trying to have a little fun with it, and I did three little bits. I did a little skit with Doug Bradley, and so the thing with Jonathan Davis was just I was just talking about throughout the process. I got to hang out with this person and that person. Jonathan Davis, I just brought a pair of bagpipes.
And he gave you default or faulty bagpipes, man. And
I bought a cheap set from eBay. And
oh,
I just
you did.
That over.
Oh, those were your bagpipes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't his idea at all. I just brought that over and I said, hey, thought it'd be funny to do this little thing where I'm trying to play bagpipes in front of you, and I'm just sucking at it. So so we just did that for a little fun, try to do something different.
That's hilarious, man. Absolutely hilarious. Now, let's hit a little bit. We've been talking a lot about the horror side. What metal band do you think really put it out there that there was some horror influence? I can tell you mine, but I can tell you what I think, but I want to hear what you think. The one band that really combined, going back as far as we need to, that combined metal and that spooky horror feeling. What band do you think that was?
So you're talking about like a band or individual artist?
Well, it can be either. I'll say that musician, band, individual artist. Whatever musician you think brought that to the forefront in your mind.
Well, I mean, I think that even though he wasn't necessarily a horror guy or even like a metal guy in a sense, Arthur Brown was one of the originators, one of the guys who really started putting theatrics, into his music. And Screamin' Jay Hawkins was another one, also not a metal guy per se at all. But, he started putting a lot of spooky stuff into his music and everything. Screaming Lord Sutch was another one who's not as well known, but he did a song called Jack the Ripper, and he used to perform it looking like Jack the Ripper, and he had blood and guts on stage and things like that. Just no one else was doing at that time. So right. I think those guys kind of started something, and then it started bleeding into heavier music, and of course Alice Cooper really took it to another level, and then Black Sabbath, of course.
Yeah, well, right. That was what I was going to say. It seems to me because, some of those that you mentioned I am not familiar with, but I always felt like Black Sabbath just kind of had that spooky sound. You look at some of their album covers, and they have, it's just a spooky-looking cover, pictures and whatnot. So...
also the fact too that they, that the name Black Sabbath came from an old horror film. So
yes, yes.
That's the connection right there. That was the first band to really bring in horror films into their music and name and everything.
Now, you know, we mentioned Black Sabbath. We mentioned Alice Cooper, and then Alice Cooper with let me just say this, with his theatrics, I think it's hard to say that Rob Zombie was not influenced by it. I've seen Rob on numerous occasions, and you look at some old Alice Cooper, and it's all theater. It is mm-hmm. absolutely amazing, and you see that. I mean, you hear Vincent Price and the Black Widow song, who is a horror icon. But what about someone like a King Diamond?
Yeah. I mean, King Diamond was a major guy. Another guy that hopefully, if things work out, I can try to get him involved in the film. But yeah, a lot of people mentioned King Diamond, of course. Merciful Fate. He was definitely a big part of it, and definitely influenced by all these guys. I mean, Alice Cooper really. To go back to him, I could probably cut together a 2-hour documentary just on people talking about Alice Cooper. I mean, he was such a huge influence on yeah. everyone. Him, between him and Black Sabbath, I mean, forget about it. There's a whole other film just on that. But yeah, I mean, there's always when someone really breaks ground like that, it's hard for other artists to not take notice and get influenced by that and turn it into their own thing. So yeah, I mean, Alice really is sort of the godfather of sort of like this metal and horror combination.
I would have to agree with you. I also seen a lady that was interviewed, a Miss Sarah Karloff.
Yeah.
How awesome was that?
Oh, Sarah was fantastic. She's someone that. I met her at Kirk's first convention, along with Ron Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi Jr. They're all friends with Kirk, and so Kirk's had him at both of his conventions, and they do the Monsterpalooza convention in California every year. So yeah, I mean, to have the descendants of the Universal horror, icons was absolutely incredible, and even though they're like Sarah and Bela are up there in age, they gave incredible answers in regard to the connection between metal and horror. And a lot of people wouldn't think that. They say, what do they know about metal and stuff?
Right, right.
Surprisingly, I mean, they, you'll see in the doc, they really kind of had some great insight and perspective on this connection between the two genres. There's some people who I didn't interview who might be like horror actors or whatever, and they just didn't. They told me right up front, it's like, I really have nothing to say about the connection. I don't know. I'm really not into metal at all. I don't know anything about it. But yeah, I mean, they were able to give some really good stuff.
I think it was in one of your promos that. I think it was Sarah that said that, there's a dark side to metal music, and there's, mm-hmm. obviously a dark side to horror. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was her. Yeah, it was her that said that.
So, I mean, that already right there tells you, like you said, she's an older lady, obviously the daughter of the great Boris Karloff, that she has kind of this, insight. She can understand, even though I'm sure she's not a metal fan. I don't think she's running out, or has the new Slipknot in her CD case right now. I can almost guarantee that, but it seems like, yeah, she has an insight. And then others that, like you said, that, actors in horror, prominent or whatnot, they have nothing to say about it. Well, but it seems to me that it's not really that hard, to talk about. I don't even think you need to, be a fan of metal to understand the connection between the two.
Yeah, of course. And I know that there's some people who, you know, there are even some metal guys that I interviewed who, even when we sat down for the interview, it's like, and I'm not really sure why they scheduled this interview, because I'm not really like a big horror guy, you know, and then they kind of start off with that. And then after we get into the conversation, they have so much to say about it. You know? And right. Of course, you know, then when we really get into it, it's like, yeah, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I really loved Godzilla and Creature from the Black Lagoon and all these movies. So, yeah. So, I mean, even though they don't really think that they're big horror fans, they have it in them. You know, they have their favorites. They you know, they do have an appreciation for the genre. And then after the fact, they're like, wow, I actually did have a lot to say about this. So there was definitely a fair amount of that as well. You know, a bunch of the horror people who didn't really, the metal guys who didn't really think they had that much into, they weren't that much into horror, but they actually were. And yeah, and of course, like there are a bunch of guys on the horror side who aren't really metal fans. I mean, you know, there are quite a few actually who said, yeah, I'm not really into metal at all. A lot of them are into like old school rock and classic rock and stuff like that, but they're friends with a lot of metal guys because the metal guys have sort of gravitated themselves towards their idols, their horror idols, and next thing you know, they become friends and they build relationships that way. Even though, you know, someone might not like so and so's music, he still likes them as a friend, and they'll attend shows together and things like that. So so the connection is there no matter what.
I mean you can't deny it. I am so looking forward to this. But you mentioned, you know, I know a lot of your interviews with metal guys, they talk about, you know, some of their favorite horror movies. I think in one of the promos, Corey Taylor mentioned Jaws terrifying him,
mm-hmm.
and I have to admit that I was also terrified. I'm about Corey's age. And Jaws terrified me. Was there a horror movie growing up, being that you've been a horror fan longer than, you know, you have metal, but is there a horror movie that has really, really stuck with you after you saw it, whether as a child or as an adult?
More so when I was a kid. I think I've become so desensitized over the years that nothing really
I have to, man. Gets and, to me and it in sucks. That sense. It really sucks because I want to be scared.
I know, and I can still appreciate a film for what it is, and I can still come out of the theater and say, oh my God, that movie was awesome. Right. But it doesn't have the same sort of effect where I'm like, you know, in my bedroom at night in the dark and like, oh crap, you know, I feel like I'm seeing something in the corner type of thing. But when I was a kid, I'd say stuff like, you know, the regular stuff like The Exorcist, you know, it definitely mm-hmm. it impacted me. It's good to a degree. I just thought the atmosphere was just so unsettling, you know, and that movie kind of got to me. But one of the movies that really kind of messed me up for a while was Pet Sematary.
The original.
Like I'd be in bed at night with a, you know, it would be pitch black, and then I would just like be looking over, and I'm just like, oh my God, is Zelda in the corner, you know, about to like run over to me, you know? And that, yeah, Zelda from Pet Sematary was one of the scariest things for me. And I still find you know, the character so goddamn creepy.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So stuff like that really kind of got to me. But like after a while, I think I just enjoyed horror films so much that nothing really bothered me. You know, I was just such an addict. That it was just rare for something to, you know, really kind of spook me out. Every now and then, like throughout the years, even like later in life, like I remember when I saw The Ring, you know, and there was just that quick shot, you know, those quick shots can really be effective. But like yes. when she's telling the story of how, I guess, she found her daughter dead in the closet, you know, then they go to that flashback with the closet door opens up real quick and you just see a flash of her daughter all messed up with the mouth open and everything like that. Like that's right. Something that kind of stuck with me. Even though I was much older at that point and fairly desensitized, like every now and then that like there'll be a movie that comes out that just has something in it that just like kind of gets to me a little bit. Even in like a movie like Mama, you know, just that one scene where the guy's in the room and he's taking pictures and his flash is going off. And every time the flash comes up on the screen, like you see a little bit more of Mama's ghost, you know, coming closer and closer, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like it can still kind of, you know, and I love that. I love that there are still movies that can, you know, there are filmmakers that can create that type of response.
Yeah, I believe that, again, in one of the trailers and promos that John Carpenter mentioned, you know, that, you know, a horror is absolutely awesome at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That means something to me, given, you know, it's John Carpenter, because I'm a huge Michael Myers fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Halloween. I had a babysitter. It was in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s. So it all seemed to, you know, just fall in line. So I'm huge into Michael Myers. So when he says that, I guess I can understand that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of course we do have two Michael Myers in the film too, which is cool.
Yes, yes, I saw that. CJ, yeah, I think CJ Graham.
Well, CJ was with Jason in Friday 13th Part 6.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, like we have like Dick Warlock in the castle. And the castle was the original.
Oh, Nick. Yeah.
Dick Warlock was in Part 2. But yeah, I mean, horror is good now. I think what happened, horror was great. I mean, every decade has its share of great horror films. I mean, I think the 80s was just fantastic. You know, you can. Even though some stuff was kind of cheesy, it was just such a great time for horror characters. I mean, that's where, you know, your Freddy's and your Jason's and Michael Myers. And I mean, Michael came earlier, but, you know, Pinhead and all these characters were coming out one after the other. And horror was so cool. Then in the 90s, things kind of got a little sloppy. You know, filmmakers really started kind of insulting the intelligence of the audience. And movies just got like really kind of dumb. And then, of course, when CGI started becoming popular, it's like, oh, wow, let's experiment with CGI and do all these effects. And, of course, the effects just, you know, take you out of the movie because they just, at that time, weren't convincing enough. So I think they got really sloppy. The storylines were dumb. The characters just weren't interesting. Nothing really new and interesting was coming out. Then later on, I think, you know, they just started getting a little bit more serious with it. And the storylines just got smarter, and the characters and the atmosphere, you know, came back again. They started to see, you know, how horror films became popular again. It's like, oh, wow, this is what we've been missing all these years. Let's kind of go in this direction and make horror films smarter. And I think, you know, and luckily that happened because I think the genre was really going downhill quickly at that time.
Yeah, yeah. This year seems to be... just a year like I haven't, you know, I don't remember in past years as far as horror films. It seems like one is coming out every month and a half. What are some of the new horror movies that have come out this year that you have seen or that you're looking forward to seeing? And tell us about that.
Oof, I mean, I have to admit, I haven't been to the movies too often.
Well, you've been busy with the dog, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been busy with the dog. I've been busy with the baby. And so it's not as easy to just get out to the theaters as much as possible. And I try to do the Netflix thing as much as we can, but even that gets a little challenging. I'm trying to remember the last really good one I saw. I might have to come back to that because right now I'm kind of drawing a blank.
All right, no worries. You know, me and you know, all my kids are grown, so and moved out. So me and my wife, Mrs. Dreds, we frequent the theater when a new one comes out. We saw the new Child's Play. I'm on the fence mm-hmm. on that one. Saw the new Pet Sematary. I really like that one. That was a good one. The It Chapter 2, I'm really looking forward to.
I would say that's the next one that I'm really looking forward to. I thought the first one was fantastic.
It was.
So I was really happy to see that, and I'm definitely looking forward to the next one, which so far I have a feeling is going to be really good as well. So that one I'm definitely looking forward to.
Three from Hell. What about that? You know, the new Rob Zombie movie. You know, were you a fan of The Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, it's different. There are different types of films.
Sure.
You know, there's definitely like a lot of Texas Chainsaw and House of a Thousand Corpses and stuff like that. But I mean, they're fun movies, and I'll check out the next one because I mean, of course, they're pretty much. Most of the people in it I've interviewed for the doc,
right.
So you know, and everything. So yeah, I'll check that out for sure. And yeah, hopefully I'll be able to catch up a little bit and see a bunch, because there's always stuff they don't really hear about so much until you just like read like a little article somewhere, and there's some obscure horror film that came out that gets rave reviews but just doesn't really get talked about, so you just happen to catch it on Netflix or whatever, and it's like, wow, you know, that how did I never hear of this movie? It's freaking fantastic.
Yeah,
and some
right.
of these movies are just, yeah, they're like sleepers for a while, and then maybe a couple of years later you look back and you say, wow, this movie's been out for years, I never heard of it, and it's awesome. So I think there's a lot of that going on too.
You know, I deal with, you know, because I got a little fed up with the whole Netflix and their horror movies. It didn't seem like they changed them out a lot. So I went to Shudder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you subscribe to Shudder, but, you know, I will watch movies on there and just like you said, I'll be like, yo, where the fuck has this been all my life?
I know.
How did I miss this over the years?
Yeah, that's happened a lot. And a lot of times what I'll do is when I have time to really catch up on movies, I'll kind of do, because, yeah, Netflix, like, their streaming is really limited as far as horror films go. It's just the same stuff, you know, like, a lot of stuff has already been seen, and they just don't have as big of a variety. Hopefully that'll change someday, but sometimes what I'll do is I'll wait for a while, and then I'll put together – I'll do a little research. I'll put together a list of a bunch of movies that I want to see. And I still think they do that. Like, you can get the discs and stuff, but you have to pay a little extra, and you get like, I don't know, depends how much you pay. Like, they'll send you the DVD or whatever. You watch it, you mail it back, that whole thing. Like, I was doing that a bunch of times because I was really into, outside of the horror films, I was really into like a lot of the like surrealistic type films, you know, like a lot of old ones. And those you just can't get streaming at all, and you just have to like special order them on discs. So I put together my list, and I just keep getting those in the mail, watch a bunch of them, cancel that part of the subscription, and let them kind of build up again over some time, and then do that, because it's just you can't get a lot of stuff you want on the streaming side.
No, you're absolutely right. I'll take on Fridays or Saturdays, hit the local mall, go to a place called FYE, and they always have, you know, a pretty decent selection of horror movies, and I think I'm up to close to maybe about 150, but I have one that's all I have one little box set thing. It's not even really a box set. It almost looks like they burnt them, but it doesn't matter because it works. But it's 50. Horror movies. I mean, we're talking Nosferatu. We're talking, you know, all the old ones, you know, 50s, 60s. It is absolutely awesome. Now, conventions. We had mentioned this before. You know, you going to conventions, helping out, you know. Was it a Kirk Von Hammock Festival? Is that
Yeah, the Festival. Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's it.
Is that just in L.A., or does this go nationwide? Because I have not seen that out here, and I would love to attend, but I'm all the way out here in the Midwest, so.
No, he's only done two. He had the first one in San Francisco, and the second one might have been San Jose, if I'm correct on that.
So he only did two in California.
Yeah. So they're not like a touring kind of convention where they'll pop up in various cities and stuff like that. He only did two. But yeah, I mean, it's tough for him because, I mean, Metallica is still so huge. So he'll sure. still be on the road with them forever. And how do you really make time to put a convention together?
Well, he needs to get his damn priorities straight. And if you talk to him, you tell him Otis B. Dredd said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll go over real well.
Fuckers Be Dreads.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Kurt, can you, like, you know, especially with it, with Metallica doing as well as it is these days and then making so much money, it's, yeah, it would be hard to drag him away to do another convention right now. But, sure. But, I mean, he loves doing it. I mean, I know he had a blast at the conventions, hanging out with all these people and performing and doing all this, you know, all these mashups and stuff. And I'm sure he'll come back and do something again. I mean, I know that he just had some sort of art exhibit, I think, up in Canada, where he brought a lot of his posters and memorabilia and things like that. It was a different kind of, it wasn't like the same kind of convention and music festival or anything like that. It's just more of a art exhibit, I believe. So he's still trying to sneak in a couple of these things here and there. And hopefully, if he has a little more time in his hands, he'll bring back the Fear Festival conventions and hopefully do more of them, but we'll see.
I you know, honestly, I have never, every once in a while, a horror convention, usually they're horror sci-fi conventions, will come close to me. Kentucky, mm-hmm. Indiana, whatnot, there's one actually coming up in September. I have not been to one yet, and I am absolutely dying to go to one. Usually my work doesn't allow it, or, you know, I just, it's bad timing pretty much is what it boils down to. Do you still attend these conventions?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, these past bunch of years, I've been going to the conventions mostly for the purpose of filming interviews and networking and things like that. Not as much just as, you know, as a person just going there to kind of have fun and go get autographs.
Basically, yeah, you're going there as a director, pretty much.
Right. I mean, because I did, you know, I went there as a fan for so many years. I mean, since I was a kid, I was going to the Fangoria conventions in New York and then went to a couple in different parts of the country. But yeah, the past couple of years has really just been about kind of networking and hopefully grabbing a couple of interviews along the way. So a lot of the interviews that I got in the documentary were filmed, you know, not at the conventions, like on the convention floor, but, you know, during those weekends, I'd be able to grab, you know, someone away from their table for a little while, or after the show's over, we go and shoot the interviews and stuff. So I'd say a fair amount of the interviews that you'll see in the doc were shot around conventions because it's just so easy. I mean, you could have like five different people that I'd want to interview at a convention, and I can just go to all of them and say, hey, you know, I'm here this weekend, we're shooting this documentary, and so on and so forth. And then we'll just kind of work around their schedules and just bang them out one after the other. It's so much easier than to try to schedule something like, you know, go to their house or do something else. And it's so much cheaper also to get a bunch of interviews in one weekend than to have to fly across the country to get one interview and fly back and, you know, back and forth. It wouldn't make any sense. So, we would shoot in hotel rooms. We would shoot in all kinds of various places that maybe wouldn't be the most ideal or the prettiest even, but, you know, sometimes it's just better to kind of work with what you got and get it than to
not get
wait
it
forever
at all.
Trying to get. Right. Yeah, exactly. So for the most part, the convention going was really just about interviews and networking.
That's awesome, Mike. I can hear the white coats coming down the hall here to my insane asylum. So I think they're telling me I need to shut up. Mike Schiff, director, producer, you do the photography, you do the editing on this new documentary coming out, The History of Horror, again, metalhorror.com. Let people know, Mike, where they can find you on the social media.
Yeah, so on all the socials, basically, it's at The Metal Horror. So that's, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's basically where I'll kind of post updates a little bit quicker. And then the smaller stuff I'll post on there. And then, of course, major announcements I'll post not only there, but also on the website as well. But on the website, you can find more information on the project itself, the people who've interviewed, some of the backstory, who's involved in the crew, you know, things like that. So, yeah, everything's right there.
That's awesome, Mike. I want to thank you for stopping by here in the Insane Asylum. Again, metalhorror.com.
is where you want to be to find out all information about this podcast, this documentary. Of course, NightLivingDreads.com, Night Living Dreads on Facebook. We're also on Stitcher. Until next time, we'll see you on the other side.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.